Future of Finance podcast, where finance finds its future.
Hello, I'm Dominic Hobson, co-founder of Future of Finance. My guest today is Gilbert Verdian, CEO of Quant, a business dedicated to making blockchains work for banks, for asset managers, for insurers, and for technology vendors by ensuring that blockchain protocols and traditional systems can interoperate successfully. Our topic today is how to accelerate our progress towards large and liquid digital asset markets. Gilbert, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dominic. It's great to be here.
I'd like to begin by asking what governments can do. And by that, I mean regulation, I mean law, I may even mean direct measures that governments could take. And I would like to start, I suppose, with regulation. If we just focus on that narrow question. And the reason for doing that is that it's the reason most often cited by digital asset issuers and by digital asset investors as to why they're not doing more right now. They say, well, the regulatory environment is very uncertain. And that seems to apply whether a regulator is very active, like Gary Gensler is with the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States, or whether they're relatively laid back, like the Financial Conduct Authority is in the United Kingdom. So you get varieties of uncertainty, but this is the main excuse, if you like, for not doing anything if you're an issuer or an investor. What would you advise a regulator who is keen to encourage the growth of the digital asset markets actually to do?
I think we're in an era of digital finance now, and it's inevitable that the markets, the instruments, the infrastructure will need to change and evolve. And to do that, you need clear regulation, the right regulation, and not heavy-handed regulation. It feels like regulators have for the past 10 years, just taken a step back to view evolution of the market, where it's heading, you know, what they need to understand and what they need to regulate and how. But it feels like that moment has passed, and it, you know, there's no longer the ability to just sit back and let the market decide. It feels that regulators need to be even more involved than they were before, because the market has changed and the value in the market has changed. Instruments are changing, money is changing into digital money. And it feels the right time for them to, instead of having a reactive regulation, to have a very proactive in the sense that they can co-design with private-public partnership what good looks like. And they are doing bits around consultations and getting feedback from the market, but it feels still a bit too slow. And you know, where we're seeing the market heading is quite accelerated and quite rapid. So it does make sense for the regulation to adopt and to adapt to that speed. And what we need from regulators is clarity and a clear set of rules on what institutions, what, you know, digital assets, instruments, equities, etc., need and can do. You know, it also makes sense to also consider reviewing regulation and reviewing regulators. You know, as I said, we're in an era of digital finance. The responsibility in this is still unclear, based on which regulator you're talking to. There's been discussions around reviewing the regulators from a parliamentary perspective in the UK, for example, but maybe it makes sense to have a new regulator that's solely responsible for digital finance, and that allows a very clear single source of truth regulation coming from one regulator rather than a multitude of regulation coming from a multitude of regulators.
Can't think what market you have in mind there, Gilbert, but I'm sure most listeners will. One thought that occurred to me, you used the word there, adopt, as well as the word adapt. And we do see, to your point about regulation needing to catch up with the progress of the technology, we do see certain jurisdictions around the world starting to develop market-leading regulatory regimes for digital assets, if you like. I'm thinking here of the Middle East in particular. One of the worries that occurs to me is that when these jurisdictions are formulating their regulations, they tend to look at what's been going on in the most advanced jurisdictions. They might look at Singapore or the European Union or occasionally the United States or the United Kingdom. And this is a long-running debate in regulation as to whether you want a single playing field all over the world or whether you want jurisdictions to compete to attract business. And I guess that's my question to you is, do you worry that this kind of copycat approach to digital asset regulation is leading to a sort of convergence on, to borrow your phrase, what looks good or what feels good? And is that convergence a good outcome compared to more intense competition to come up with regulations that succeed or fail on their own merits, as opposed to being copied from somebody else's plans?
I think the very nature of digital finance is global by default. And that's why it's very different to our current financial instruments and our current financial systems, where they're very segmented into jurisdictions and you have complete authority and sovereignty of that jurisdiction. The nature of new forms of assets in terms of digital assets, digital instruments, financial, digital finance, they are very easily able to be migrated and operate globally. And so what we're seeing regulators do is trying very hard to attract their centers of excellence or their jurisdiction as the appropriate place for global finance. But I think what can happen is a constant rush of institutions just favoring what's the best regulation, what's the best jurisdiction at the time. And then that migration, if someone else comes up with a better model, then the migration to another jurisdiction. And we saw that happen quite considerably during the focus of the crypto exchange era, where they just migrated jurisdiction based on whoever allowed them to operate in a particular place. We can't have that uncertainty with institutions, and we need stability and we need resilience. And so what we need from a global perspective is harmonization of regulation and acceptance of regulatory rules. So it makes sense to have a baseline regulation that is consistent between major jurisdictions, similar to what we have in Europe in passporting, for example, where different regulators are able to set their own rules, but they're respected and accepted in different jurisdictions. And so it's very easy for firms to migrate regulation and regulators as they're working in different jurisdictions. But it also makes sense for more larger jurisdictions like the UK to really set the example and set the bar of what that looks like. We've always been a financial center and it makes the UK very attractive globally. And so if we get this right and we are seen as a modern, proactive regulator, and if we think about having a new form of regulation or a new form of regulator managing digital finance, then we can set the bar on what that can look like globally, and harmonize a UK-led approach to other regulators and allow global firms to really operate globally but based in the UK and export that regulation to a harmonized system.
I see what you're saying. We need regulatory competition, but not regulatory arbitrage. It's kind of not helpful for FTX to be able to move from Hong Kong to Bahamas, but it would be helpful if leading jurisdictions like the UK set out a basic foundation on which other markets could build. And on that point, I think I'm right to say the UK was the first jurisdiction to have a regulatory sandbox. And I've become a bit cynical about sandboxes. Every jurisdiction seems to have one now, but I've never seen a compelling set of data which indicates that these are actually successful, that they've grown, lots of unicorns have emerged. I mean, you do see people emerge from them into the regulated area, but you don't see a lot of unicorns as a result of that. And I also, perhaps more worryingly, haven't seen regulations adapting as a result of the experience which regulators have had inside these sandboxes. Am I being too cynical about the ubiquity of the sandbox? Or are they still useful devices? I mean, I'm amazed that United Kingdom, for example, is having withdrawn from the European Union, is kind of copying Europe now. It's copying its own invention back again, almost. Am I being too cynical?
I think sandboxes are a good tool to validate regulatory thinking in terms of what can work and what potentially might not work. I don't think they're be all and end all, but they're really designed to allow existing regulated entities, such as institutions, to venture into a new area, which is quite unknown and unclear for them. And the sandbox is a great way to test the waters and understand, well, does existing regulation apply or not, or do we need something different? And most times what we're seeing is a sandbox can be practically tested to understand the market reaction, the risk, compliance, for example, without having enforcement, which is quite good. But then it most of the time it shows existing regulated entities that we do have sufficient regulation today that can cover that new aspect, that new instrument, that new offering, or whatever it is. So it is a good practical validation, but being a sandbox, it's probably more beneficial to existing regulated entities than to small startups or smaller entities getting into that space.
Let's talk a bit about the law now. And I'm bringing up the law not just because it's often raised as a barrier alongside regulation, but because if you look back at, say, the Industrial Revolution, it wasn't just about steam and coal and electricity. It was actually about changes in the law as well. Laws of contract, laws of patent, laws of limited liability. So if we are progressing towards a digital asset revolution or a digitalization revolution, the law is actually going to be very important. And I've been taking part in several conversations in which a lot of hope seems to be being invested in the greater flexibility of the common law jurisdictions, the sort of Anglo-Saxon world of United Kingdom, United States, Singapore, which have this common law tradition, as opposed to the civil law tradition, which you see at work in most obviously the European Union, but also in Germany, France, Switzerland. And the work of the UK Law Commission looks very promising. I certainly find it very helpful to read. Whereas when you look at things like the markets in crypto assets regulation out of the EU, it seems a bit backward looking, out of date almost as soon as it's passed. It kind of lacks that adaptability going forward. And then on the other hand, I look at what's happening in Germany, the EWPG, I don't try and pronounce the name of the law itself. It does seem to have encouraged activity, not just issuance, but also the development of custodial services, registration services, and so on. So I wonder what your view is of the law. Is it better to be inside an adaptable system which can evolve naturally in response to challenges? Or do you need governments to sort of step in and say, well, actually, we're going to change the law, write a whole set of new laws so that you know exactly where you stand in relation to the courts in the development of this asset class? And maybe there's a third option between these two where you kind of, and you touched on this in one of your earlier comments, where you kind of modify what you have already. You sort of change the law to accommodate this new asset rather than rewrite it completely. So what is it to be, evolution, revolution, or some sort of compromise in the middle? What's your view?
I think what we're seeing is a evolution of existing laws to adapt to a digital age. The Law Commission's report was a few hundred pages long and very detailed, and the output of that was to redefine property in terms of including digital assets, and that makes sense. You can fit under an existing structure and an existing framework and a legal framework, and what happens then is it's determined by case law. It happens case by case, and then you've got precedents. So it's quite adaptable and it feels like the right approach. But what we need is not heavy-handed law. I think what we need is a structure that we can work within, but also underneath that, you've got regulation, which is allowing compliance to the law, but also, you know, providing very clear guidelines and clear rules on, you know, what is permitted, what is acceptable, and what is a grey area. And a grey area is what you can bring up into case law and determine what is right. Because it's such a nascent area, I think there will be a lot of that. We're still quite early. The maturity is still yet to come. But, you know, having that certainty and having that framework in place makes sense. But we need to adapt and evolve the regulatory system, but also the legal system as we progress. So, you know, we are at the beginning of a digital finance transformation, and having the tools that underpin it right now is the right way, and we just have to see this through. So it could be quite different over the next 5 to 10 years, but it'll be quite clear in terms of the evolution of what is correct from a legal perspective and what is applicable from a regulatory perspective.
Okay, let's put regulation and law to one side and ask, as I indicated at the outset, what governments could actually do directly. And here I have two concrete ideas to put to you. One is that governments, take the UK government, could say, we're going to issue all gilt-edged securities now in purely digital native form only. And that would pretty much instantly create a large liquid benchmark token market. My second idea is, one of the obstacles to rapid growth in digital assets is this hugely inefficient and highly intermediated post-trade infrastructure you have in the securities, and to a lesser extent in the payments markets as well. What if, and my experience here is largely based in the securities markets, if mandatory buy-ins were imposed? So if you failed to settle a securities trade, actually you were mandatorily bought in, and the cost of that is potentially open-ended. So it's a very serious cost, much more serious than the financial penalties currently being imposed on organizations that fail to settle. Would you support government looking to kickstart progress by taking steps like that, by setting an example and by imposing penalties on the inefficient? Is that a way forward? Would you like to see governments acting directly in that sort of way?
I think there's been, in technology specifically, there's been many instances where government intervention and action has really fostered a whole generation of growth within that technology sector. I mean, we saw that in 1983 with the adoption of the internet. There were many competing network protocols, local area and wide area network protocols. It was only when the Department of Defense stepped in and said, we're all going to be using TCP/IP, and the cutoff day is the 1st of January 1983. Then everyone had to follow suit, because otherwise you cannot work with government if you're not following the same protocol, or if you're not implementing the same protocol. So I think we've seen that work quite a few times. What the UK is quite good in doing already is we've been able to start changing legislation and rules. And if you look at the listing rules that are changing for the London Stock Exchange, making it easier to list, that's quite positive. In the budget in 2 weeks ago, the Chancellor announced that they're allowing ISAs for UK PLC shares. That's another great way to foster and encourage liquidity and growth in that sector. It makes sense for if we are transitioning to a digital finance economy, it makes sense for the government to enact that in some form of action. Gilts have been very interesting. I think it's a matter of time. Treasuries and gilts are tokenized, and you know, there's tests that people have done in terms of experiments on if that's possible. It very much is, but if the original issuance is done in a tokenized form by government, that's a great way to trickle down into the rest of the economy, because that's how it's stored, that's how it's traded, and that's how it's transacted from a settlement perspective. And then having that trickle down effect will also allow us to consider T0 settlement, because then you've got assets that are very liquid, that are on chain, and from a custody and ownership perspective, it's very clear. And then you marry that with tokenized commercial bank money for settlement, and then you've got a leapfrog from T+3 to T0 almost real time, and all the processes can be embedded within that transaction. So it will be a catalyst into the system, starting from the top down. So it's to be yet to be seen. I think there's enormous opportunity to look at the capital markets in a new way, and if there's a top down action that can trickle into the rest of the market, it should be considered.